Wungarali Majinu, Adam Shirley, ABC Radio, Canberra Wurundjeri.
If you look across all different workplaces, small business, large universities, education sector more broadly, there are many people from different backgrounds who come to here, not just grow up here, but come to here to pursue a career. In academia, Katerina Tewa is making a mark. Katerina has just become the first Indigenous Pacific person to become a professor at the Australian National University. Her appointment formally starts from January next year, but if I could say, Professor in Waiting Katerina Tewa, congratulations and thanks so much for being with us on Mornings. I want to make sure I get that title correct too.
Thank you so much, Nisambula Vinaka. Kona Māori to you and Kamna Māori to your listeners. Thank you so much for having me and for the congratulations. That's very kind of you.
In that phrase, you give us a slight insight into your wonderful heritage and how diverse it is. Give us a picture of where you're from and who you are, Katerina.
Yeah, so I was born and raised in Fiji. I went to primary school and secondary school in Fiji, and I grew up there. And my my community, my people, my father's people were from Rambi Island in the northern part of Fiji. But they have a very interesting and slightly traumatic background in that they were displaced from Kiribati to Fiji in 1945, right after World War II. They'd come from war camps and their island had been devastated by both World War II and phosphate mining by Australia and New Zealand and Great Britain. So they'd been through a series of major events and were moved to Rambi in 1945. And so that's how our people end up in Fiji as a minority community there, but very much connected, you know, to other communities across Fiji. But that's where I'm from.
How has that heritage and those events shaped your view of yourself and also what you want to do in your life?
Yeah, so I actually went into academia, you know, many years ago, 1996, to do an MA in Pacific Island Studies at the University of Hawaii because I didn't know enough about our history. So, you know, through cultural and community events, you know, you'd hear things from aunties and uncles and from my dad, and we'd participate in all the celebrations and the performances, but no one would ever sort of break down to us exactly what happened, how we ended up in Fiji, why we were a minority community. There's only about 6,000 Barnabans even today left on the planet. So I really wanted to know more about that. And I stuck with academia so I could have access to archives and books and read up on what other people had written about Barnaba. And it turns out quite a few of them were from the ANU. So when I started my MA, I started reading all these books by Australian scholars, by Australian historians, and then started to get a very interesting picture about what had happened to our island and how it had been devastated. And that instilled in me a passion to continue all the way, you know, through my PhD, get access to the National Archives of Australia, go through there's thousands and thousands of records about Barnaba and also Nauru that was being mined for phosphate at the same time. And it was just incredible to be able to have that time and that privilege to sit with those records and just to learn exactly what happened, how it happened, and also to note which voices were missing in those histories, in those records. Many of our own people's voices were not there.
No. And see, to me, that sounds like a very personal and all-in process, but also a professional commitment that requires just that 24/7 commitment. How have you sustained that and managed to continue that right up to the present day?
Yeah. So now it's been, a couple of decades of writing about Barnaba, you know, sharing our story with the rest of the world. And I think One of the things I found really interesting in the archives is that a lot of the content was visual. So a lot of people, when they do their historical research, they go into the archives, they focus a lot on the written documents. So they try to get the facts of history from all the writing, all the reports, all memoirs and things like that. And there'll be this like photographic or other sorts of records that they may or may not pay so much attention to. So the company that I was researching was the British Phosphate Commissioners, and they had this massive, amazing hundreds and hundreds of photographs of our island. And so you could really see how the island changed over time as the mine took over the landscape. It was like watching an island being eaten away and then seeing pinnacles being left behind. So I paid a lot of attention to those visual archives, and those have actually sustained me. So I wrote a book about it. You know, all academics are expected to write a book. I wrote a book called Consuming Ocean Island, like eating Ocean Island, because a lot of the phosphate went straight into Australian and New Zealand farms through superphosphate. So
just on that image you just painted, that is, sorry to interrupt, that is such an arresting image you painted, as if the land was being eaten into and left scarred and broken. Do you do you look back at some of those images whenever you start to maybe fatigue or tire to then renew that enthusiasm, that deep passion you have for telling this story?
Absolutely. I totally do. Everything I do in academia comes from the perspective of being grounded in our ancestral landscape. So when you do everything, when you're teaching, your research, your relationships with others comes from land, It tends to sustain and remind you of why it's important to share this story more broadly, because, you know, everyone's talking about climate change, the impacts on landscapes and oceanscapes. And here you have a tiny island in the middle of the Pacific that was eaten away by industry, by mining to fuel global agriculture, which is, you know, part of the problem of climate change and of carbon emissions, and it's still there devastated. It's actually recently run out of fresh water. So it's been in the news quite regularly because there's no more fresh drinking water or water for anything else on the island. It's still there like a little museum of what happens when you destroy an environment. So that absolutely sustains me. And I have translated my research into visual exhibitions, multimedia exhibitions, which have been shown in Sydney, they've been shown in New Zealand, bits of it have been shown in Hong Kong. Like I'm trying to get the story out to broader audiences to think about all of these different issues in the Pacific in the past and how they tell us something very important about the present and the future as well.
Question might be, are we willing to learn the lesson and react to it as opposed to let it pass and just understand it for what it was at the time? You're hearing from soon-to-be professor in Pacific Studies at the Australian National University, Katerina Tewa. With this crucial story and the decades of work you're putting into it, to what degree do you see yourself as someone who spreads a further message, inspires others to get into the academic fields you have, or is it more your focus on the work you're doing and others will follow if they take an interest? I'm so interested in that, Katerina.
Yeah, I think it's both. I think I'm quite motivated and inspired and driven, you know, by my work, but I'm also a very passionate teacher. So I teach interdisciplinary Pacific studies to, you know, students at the ANU. So I'm very passionate about that. And I do recognize that there are not many of us Pacific Islanders in academia at all in Australia. So the Research School of Pacific Studies was founded in 1946 at the ANU. And to be, you know, the first professor was Professor Bridge Lal from Fiji. I'm the first woman and an Indigenous Pacific Islander. But for all those decades, it tells you a certain sort of story about how a university or even a country can do so much work on the Pacific, so much policy, so much research, so many things, and yet we still don't have enough Pacific academics in this country. It's not right, and we need to change that. We need to encourage others to come into academia to feel like they can be experts on their own islands and their own regions. This is so important. So I'm very, very passionate about that and trying to create the space for others to be able to see themselves in academia, not just as students, but all the way at the top.
If we think about the concept of self-determination, you've got to be it, see it to be it, these sorts of things. In fact, how much ground does Australia have to make up in this area if we consider yourself and British Lyell to be trailblazers into 2021 and there not being more people with their intensive intelligence and knowledge in the fold of academia on these issues?
Yes, Australia's got a lot of catching up to do. I believe the University of Melbourne has just given one Tongan researcher, a medical scientist, a promotion as well. So I don't know her personally, but she's another really important trailblazer I think that people should find out a lot more about. But to have only three ever in the whole of Australia, after all of these years and decades in Australia's relationship with the Pacific, which is very, very intense, there's a lot of ground to cover. And it's not just at the top levels, it's not just at university, it's at the primary school level and the secondary school level as well. All Australians need to know a lot more about the Pacific Islands region, partly because Australia is so engaged. You know, if you think of aid and development and the amount of funds that's poured into the Pacific, that's one reason. But for many other reasons, such as the Pacific diaspora in Australia, the Pacific Islanders live here. Pacific people were brought here as part of the sugar slave trade, you know, in the 1800s. There are islanders all over Australia and not acknowledged, or people don't learn about them, you know, in their schools as part of curriculum. It's not a priority in the Australian curriculum, but Asia is, sustainability is, and Indigenous Australia is, and that's very, very important. But the fourth part of our region that all Australians need to know more about is the Pacific. It needs to be mainstreamed.
There's a lot to be set right here, and you're one of the leading advocates and researchers in doing so. Congratulations on your soon-to-be professor role and title, and it's been a pleasure speaking with you and hearing your knowledge today, Katerina.
Thank you so much for having me on the show. I really appreciate it. Vinaka Bakalev.
This is Mornings with Adam Shirley on ABC Radio Canberra.